Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And hey, the weather's warming up this week. And it's time to get back out. If you haven't been running or jogging or even walking or doing things in the outdoors, this is the time to get back out there and do that. And maybe you've got an ache or a pain or a sprain or a strain that's hindering that, or maybe you'll develop one as you go along. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. One of our guests, the other, Jill Tyne, her sister, Jill Tyne Nessenbaum, faculty associate in UW Physical Therapy. And I tell you what, they're with us to answer your questions. So give us a call at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Jill, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
And Lori, great to have you back as well.
It's very good to be here. It's a beautiful day.
Right.
You know, I spent this I have an office across campus. And so one of the things I love to do every day is walk from my other office to the radio studio and back. And this winter, there were times, as I have to say, that the sidewalks were so bad, I jumped on the bus and took the bus. And so I didn't get as much exercise in that way as I normally do, and I'm probably not the only one.
Right. And the sidewalks are still hazardous. I mean, just about every day I walk out of my house or out of my office and I say to myself, boy, this is keeping us in business. I mean, I saw a patient this morning who fell on the ice twice and really injured her knee shoveling snow. I mean, we've seen people with back pain and shoulder pain, but a lot of fractures, sprains, contusions, all kinds of stuff from falling on the ice. So, you know, the take-home message is there's still slippery spots out there. There's still uneven ice spots, and there's also uneven pavement now.
Right.
I mean, the pavement has really hurled itself in response to this winter also. So people who are out there running and have that, you know, regular running route that they know, it may be different from when they ran it last fall.
Right, and people have started biking too, and you really have to watch out for the holes in the concrete.
Yes.
We have a whirlpool on our street right now. There's such a deep hole, so you have to be very, very careful with that too, that you're not thrown off your bike, or if you're a biker and you have to veer around a big pothole, that you're not veering into traffic. So there's still some hazards out there for sure.
Well, Gary in Black Creek has already called in with a question for you, and let's go to him. Gary, hi.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
About 3 weeks ago, I started feeling a lot of soreness in my right shoulder. I'm 60 years old and you know, pretty active and pretty good shape. And I didn't really have any trauma, you know, no injury or no falls or anything like that. And it's you know, just a general soreness in the shoulder, and it seems to be more concentrated, you know, around the under the armpit in that area and around the shoulder blade, and maybe a little occasional tingling, and once in a while the triceps gets a little sore. There's no swelling or redness. See, I've got really good movement. I can lift things and have good strength and no restrictions in moving. And I could, you know, like cross-country ski aggressively for an hour and a half, and that doesn't seem to bother it. But when I put my arms straight down, it can be real sore, and kind of, you know, like extending it. Or when I sleep on my back, it's been real painful, and I've had to take Tylenol most nights.
And so you'd like to get that taken care of?
I'd like to think it's...
Indeed. Tell me a little bit more about the tingling.
Well, it's not significant. I've just, you know, I looked on WebMD, and they gave me some symptoms to think about. And, you know, once in a while, if I'd be biking, or I've done a little biking, and, you know, if I put a little strain on it, I sometimes feel a little just tingling at in the tricep area and maybe down by the elbow a little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, the first thing that both Jill and I thought, because we looked at each other and nodded our heads, is that it's not coming from your shoulder, but it's coming from your neck.
From the neck?
Yeah. Typically, pain that originates in your shoulder stays around the top of your shoulder, maybe comes down the outside of your shoulder to kind of where your deltoid inserts, is reproduced with arm movement. But the things that you describe implicate your neck. For example, being on your bike, it's when your neck is extended, places your neck at risk. When you sleep on your back, places your neck at risk, doesn't really place your shoulder at risk.
And the fact that you could cross-country ski successfully for an hour and a half and it didn't increase your symptoms in your shoulder makes us think that it's not the muscles around the shoulder that are the source of the symptoms. So that's what makes us both think that it's coming more from your cervical spine or your neck.
Even though that discomfort mostly seems to be under the arm in that area?
Yes. Yeah. There's I can't think off the top of my head of any primary shoulder problem that hurts under your arm, except maybe an inferior dislocation, which is a rare animal itself. That's not at all a typical place for a primary shoulder problem to hurt. That kind of pain is typically referred from someplace else.
I've been icing, you know, the underarm area and actually above the shoulder, and that didn't seem to have too much effect. Actually, I started icing and heating, you know, a couple of days ago in those areas, and that seemed to... You know, now it seems to have some relief, and I was able to sleep last night without any, you know, real discomfort. So.
Yeah, I might try looking at your neck, at your neck posture, doing a little bit of stretching around your neck, being aware of your neck posture when you sleep or when you're on your bike, and see if you can control your symptoms by changing the posture of your neck.
Like any stretch, what type of stretches for the neck?
Well, one thing that you really want to focus on is not letting your neck go into extension. So when you're riding your bike and you have to lean forward to reach your handlebars and you want to keep your eyes at level, that automatically puts your neck in extension. So think about kind of tucking your chin back, almost like you're making a frowny face, like what are you talking about when you pull your chin back? And that'll help keep your, especially your upper cervical spine in a little bit more flexion and won't let it extend.
So you think it's mostly the neck area then?
Yeah, that would be my guess. So, you know, your options are you can try a little bit of this, see if it helps. Go see a physical therapist and get a good evaluation. Have someone examine your shoulder and your neck. And it's not a difficult diagnosis to make that distinction between those two areas. And then they can get you on the right rehab program.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Is icing doing any good?
If it's making you feel better and you're sleeping better at night, sure.
Okay. So thank you.
All right. You thanks, bet. Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Jim in Viroqua next. Jim, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a guitar player, and I have Dupuytren's disease in my left hand.
Dupuytren's contracture?
Yes.
Yep.
And my brother, who has the same disease a long time ago, had surgery on both his hands, and then his ring finger and his baby finger both went down and completely down and touched the palm of his hands after the surgery. Yeah. And now he's been going to Florida, and I guess there's somebody in Indiana now that does manipulation on his hand, and it seems to be getting better, but my hand has... got to a point, and it hasn't changed in 10 years, and I still play guitar, and I have no problem. I just worried about the future, and have you heard anything about manipulation with in regards to Dupuytren's or surgery? Has surgery improved? Or
yeah, maybe you could tell us, too, Lori, about what is Dupuytren's? Basically, what is it?
Basically, it's a contracture of the sort of the we call it the palmar fascia, where you're in the palm of your hand, your fingers flex down and towards making a fist, and it's a tightness in that connective soft tissue. So his brother's probably talking about seeing somebody who's doing some deep tissue massaging or, you know, joint mobilization or manipulation to loosen that soft tissue. It's my guess. In terms of surgery for that over the, you know, in the past 10 years, I'm not familiar enough with that problem. That's not a problem that we typically see. People with that kind of problem often go to a hand clinic because it's primarily affecting their hand function. So I might check in with somebody there. If you're, you know, the guitar playing is wonderful to continue that. It really is going to help improve and maintain your functional mobility.
Right. And if you haven't seen any changes in your motion, I would leave well enough alone. One of the side effects of surgery, of course, is you build up a ton of scar tissue in that area because the fascia in your hand is so thick and fibrotic. So if you have surgery, there's a problem that, you know, you have to get your hand moving right away. Otherwise, you're just going to scar right back down. So that's one of the big challenges of the surgery. And, of course, that we can't do anything about that.
Right.
Has your brother been successful with his treatment?
Yeah, it seems to be improving. I mean, both his hands were all the way down. And so any movement he's getting is probably...
is a real advantage.
Right. So you and he have different
functional levels.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I never went and had surgery, and mine... his came on right in after high school, and mine didn't come on till later.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've had it for probably 20 years now, and it got to a certain point and hasn't changed, and I'm still able to play guitar, but occasionally I feel it tightening up, but then I play my guitar or something, and it seems to loosen back up. So
great. Well, don't give up the guitar then.
Okay. Well, I don't plan on it. I always, once in a while, will start worrying, what happens if it goes worse and I can't play guitar? And I was just wondering if you guys had heard anything about the manipulation and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the best thing you can do is keep playing the guitar in order to be assured that you'll be able to play it for a long time to come. Thanks very much, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Holly in Elm Grove is next. Hi, Holly.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
I, at the ripe old age of 51, had both knees replaced. Ooh. The left one healed just beautifully, and the right one just didn't. And I will admit to having an accident about 18 months ago when 90 pounds of German Shepherd crashed into the right knee at the speed of light. And that took me out that didn't put me back on crutches. But and then I got tangled up in some underbrush up north and twisted it up pretty good last fall. But I'm at a point now where I can do a couple of flights of stairs. I do some water aerobics, and it's swollen and hot and stiff, and feels like there's something inside. Doctor says it's fine. X-rays show that it's perfect, and I just can't seem to make any progress. And oh, how I'd love to kneel again because I'm a gardener.
Yeah. Mm. How long ago was your right knee done?
2.5 years.
Okay. And did you have them done at the same time?
No, a couple of months apart.
Okay. All right. And was it doing well until the German Shepherd? I mean, was it following the same track as your left one had until the German Shepherd?
Yeah, pretty much. And that was about 4 months after surgery.
So. No.
Okay. All right. And so the physician took radiographs and looked at your knee and kind of said, oh, looks great.
Yeah. Everything's where I put it.
Everything's where I put it. Well, you know, the orthopedic surgeon puts the hardware in. And once the hardware is in and it looks like it's in place, they kind of wash their hands of the situation. So it might be time to seek out somebody else who will take a look at where you're at now and say, oh, okay, let me look at the soft tissue. Let me look at the alignment. Let me look at your leg length. Let me look at your muscle strength and look at you where you're at now and not just look at the hardware that he or she put in. It's hard not to be distracted by that when you put that hardware in.
Oh, sure.
Have you seen a physical therapist since these?
I certainly saw one during the recovery, which wasn't the most fun I've ever had.
thank you for not saying anything disparaging.
No, without it, I wouldn't be able to do anywhere near what I do today because this is a level of skill that you need and motivation and somebody to help you through because nobody is going to do it on their own unless they're strange.
Well, what I suggest is going back to that physical therapist who saw you, you know, at a previous time and helped you get through it and have them take a look at your knee now because the PT doesn't have any obligation regarding the hardware being put in, but they'll take a look at your function, at your motion, at your strength, at the swelling, at the redness, and make some recommendations about where to go from there. You may need to tweak your exercise program. They may recommend another practitioner for you to see. But they'll take a look at your knee where it's at now and make an assessment and help get you going in the right direction. It sounds like you're a highly active individual, and it may be that you need some activity modification, some education about how to modify your activities to keep the swelling and the inflammation down. But you're right. that at this point in time you shouldn't be having that.
No? Well, is this something I would need a prescription for, or can I just make an appointment with most?
What you should do is you should call the clinic where you were seen, and it depends upon their policies and the third-party payer. You should be able to see a physical therapist for the same condition you have seen them for in the past under Wisconsin state law. But each clinic sets their own policies about that. So I just call the clinic back and ask them. And if you do need a prescription, it should be as simple as a call back to that surgeon.
Terrific.
All right. Good
luck. Thanks, Holly.
All right. You all take care.
Yep.
Thank you.
Al in Lewiston, Minnesota is up next. Hi, Al.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. It's awful nice to get some professional advice without being billed for it.
Oh, you just wait.
All right, I'm 59, looking at 60 pretty soon, and I've had both knees replaced, and I have a spondylolisthesis with a root nerve pinch. Now, above all, I know I need to lose weight. You know, I'm doing exercises, a little yoga, a little tai chi, but I'm not losing any weight. And you're talking about doing things outdoors, and I was wondering, you know, exactly what I could do which would help me lose some weight.
Well, first of all, the yoga and the tai chi are wonderful to keep your lower extremity flexibility and also for balance purposes. There have been a lot of studies that have looked at the benefits of tai chi in reducing risk of falls as we get older. So definitely keep with those. With regards to your total knees, something like walking or stationary biking would be ideal. Because it doesn't load your knee joint so much. There's no pounding or impact. Walking would be fine as well, especially if you could walk on a well-padded trail, and I'm sure you have those in Minnesota. So something less hard than concrete would be ideal.
Yeah, those things would all be great in the outdoors. Are your knees bothering you now, or they're doing okay?
They're doing all right. And the problem is they have a lot of chronic pain. You know,
okay.
Which prevents me from sleeping most of the time.
Okay.
And it's not in the knees. The knees hurts, but the problem is this root nerve pinch.
It's the back. Yeah. Okay. Are you seeing somebody for that? You seeing a PT for that?
Yeah, not a PT, but I've been going to a chronic pain clinic at Gunnarsson.
Okay.
Oh, wonderful.
Sure.
And, you know, and I see my chiropractor once a week, you know. And
well,
he gets a lot of movement out of that pelvis
area,
you know.
Well, most pain programs that I'm familiar with include a physical therapy component. So if they're not talking
to you... Yeah, they hooked me up with a TENS unit.
Okay.
And,
all right.
You know, I'm learning how to use that now. That's
okay.
Kind of recent. And it's, you know, what that is where you put on...
Sure. Yeah, sure. And have they talked at all about a pool for exercise?
No.
The pool would be a great place for you to exercise. Sometimes for people like you, Al, who are trying to lose weight, but you got knees that hurt and you got a back that hurts and you can't walk long enough or far enough to lose weight, to exercise to lose weight, the pool's a great place to start and to get you going and build you up, build up your strength, build up your tolerance for exercise, lose some weight, and then you can transition onto land.
Now, what do you do in a pool to exercise? Do you walk through the pool?
There's a thousand things you can do, but at a very minimum, just walking. For someone who wants to lose weight, walking, bicycling, sitting on a noodle and bicycling, or you can put a belt on and you can do deep water running or cross-country skiing for weight loss. Even if you can't swim, with a belt on, lying on your back, flutter kicking with some fins on your feet, great exercise. Or we can modify swimming strokes for people who are, you know, marginally good swimmers to help them lose weight. So those are all things in the weight loss category. And then in the strengthening category, there are so many exercises you can do to build up strength in your back, in your hips, in your core muscles, in your legs, without having the full weight of gravity on your joints.
Wow. And and what do you recommend for an amount of time in a pool?
Well, it depends upon a person's tolerance, but if the idea is weight loss, you know, the American College of Sports Medicine says a minimum of 25 to 30 minutes a session, 5 days a week.
Okay.
So some people need to work up to that. I see some people, for example, who have fibromyalgia, who have a very low tolerance for exercise. They may start out at only 5 or 10 minutes of exercise and work their way up over, you know, 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck, Al. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today, UW physical therapists. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking physical therapy issues today, aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, faculty associate in the UW Physical Therapy Program. Glad to have them along. And lots of callers online, so let's go back to the phones and to John in Green Bay. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning, one and all. This would be in regards to a really bad fall I took on some icy steps outside in the dark about 3.5, roughly weeks ago. I really fell hard on my right shoulder and my right hip, like kidney area.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, I mean, down for the count. And I went and saw my family physician a few days after that because my shoulder and my lower back was sore. He says, you know, no major problem to the, I thought my rotator cuff or something was really damaged. My shoulder was sore. But I'm getting on and off, slight pain and tingling in that, like, sciatic nerve area where I, you know, I fell on that right side lower back area, one of the steps that I hit. And I'm going to see a physical therapist tomorrow at Bellin in Green Bay.
Wonderful.
I'm just wondering, can that be... you know, helped the sciatic nerve through physical therapy? Because my shoulder seems to be getting a little better now.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yes, absolutely. What the physical therapist will probably do is examine you to see if it's truly your sciatic nerve that's the source of your symptoms, or if it's coming from your low back or a little bit higher up in your back, per se. And so they'll do an evaluation to look at that, see if it's due to some muscle tightness, some muscle guarding, or if it's due to some kind of stiffness in your spine, per se, where some joint mobilizations could be helpful. So absolutely, going to physical therapy is ideal. And this is something we see in the clinic very, very frequently, unfortunately.
Yep. Those are, and make sure to talk about your shoulder as well. Just because it's on a trajectory to get better, you can plateau at any point in time. So be sure to follow up with your shoulder as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
you
thanks,
bet. Good
John.
Luck.
Good luck.
Another ice-related trauma.
Right, exactly.
Stephanie and Madison, hi.
Hi, Larry, and hi to Jill and Lori. I just really love these particular guests. I always learn so much, and I wanted to share that I have Dupuytren's disease, and I had surgery on both hands. The reason is that I was a massage therapy student, and I really, you know, my range of motion was definitely impaired. I mean, not severely, but enough to, you know, to make a difference. And I went, the first hand surgeon I went to just blew me off and just, you don't need to do that. We don't need to do that. It's not, you know, it's not cancer. It's not any problem. I really, you know, did stretching, cross fibril massage on it. Those fibers are really, really tough. And mm-hmm. so I went to another hand surgeon that had just come on board, really experienced hand surgeon. And the guy said, sure, you know. And he'd done a lot of these surgeries, and I had wonderful results with both. It's really, you know, it's not a really involved surgery. I had small scars. They encouraged me right away to massage them and to use your hands right away. You know, you just have to protect the stitches.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the concerns that they sometimes have are maybe the possibility of the contractures coming back.
Right.
This has been well over 10 years, and I haven't had any problem with either hand. I still have my full range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That's really good information. You know, not just this situation, but any kind of surgery, you have to weigh the potential benefits against the potential risks. And so, you know, Jim, who called earlier, seemed to be functioning at a fairly high level. He was able to do everything he needed to do. The potential to make him a lot better, it's kind of small, but the potential to make him worse is pretty big.
Right.
For Stephanie, you know, it was clearly impacting your vocation.
Right.
So, you know, so you really needed something to help get you better.
I couldn't do the kneading moves, for example.
Right.
They were really hard to do, and I just didn't have quite the stretch. You know,
sure.
I had about half the mobility, especially in my thumb area.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, she weighed the potential risk, the potential benefit, and decided it was worth making that decision. And that's what people really should do when they're facing that kind of question.
And then found someone who was good and
yes.
experienced
yes.
and had done a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other key.
Yep.
Thanks,
Thank
Stephanie.
You.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling and sharing that with us. John in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a small little question. I think I figured out part of the problem. I get knee pains in my right knee, and I think it's related to me not having very much of a foot arch.
That's very possible.
Because usually when I buy a new pair of shoes, they're good for a while, and then probably about 3-4 months into it, I start getting knee pains again. Mm-hmm. So I started buying some inserts, but I keep finding these goofy gel inserts, and I'm looking for something a little more
rigid. Reliable.
Would I have to see an actual foot specialist to have?
To have orthotics made?
Yeah.
There are, well, first of all, can I ask you, say you wear your shoes for 3 to 4 months. Are these like your exercise shoes, the shoes you run in, or?
No, my work shoes. I'm a mechanic, so I'm on my feet all day
okay.
long.
Okay. So, yeah. So you're on hard concrete with yes. very hard shoes. So you would definitely be somebody that would benefit from some sort of insert. Physical therapists can make orthotics. There are not every physical therapist will make orthotics, but there are PTs who make orthotics. The other group of folks who make orthotics are podiatrists.
Okay.
So there are two issues that come to my mind when I think about this, and that is, one is the arch support issue.
Mm-hmm.
The second is, because you're a mechanic and you're on cement all day, that there is a cushion issue also. So when your shoes wear out at 4 months, it could also be to insufficient cushion in the heel of your shoe. So I think the first thing you should sort out is how much of it is coming from the position of your arch, how much of it is coming from the potential impact control that you're going to lose at 3 to 4 months in a work shoe on a cement surface.
Right.
So so that might be something you can sort out a little bit. The gel inserts, the shock absorptive inserts like sorbitane mm-hmm. and stuff, those will help with the impact stuff.
Right.
If you go to a place like REI or something like that, they have a number of mid-range arch supports that you could try out to see how they work. They're in the, you know, $25 to $50 range that you can just buy off the shelf. I, in fact, have traded my custom-made orthotics for that mid-range orthotic because they tend to be working better for my feet right now. Okay. So you can try something like that as an interim. Try the gel and see if you can sort out if it's the arch posture or if it's the impact.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, John, for calling. And Dan in La Crosse is up next. Let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I got some plantar fasciitis from doing a extreme martial arts class.
Sure.
And I've been icing it. I've done heel cord stretches and calf stretches and rolling a cold frozen bottle on the heel of my foot,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I got some new arch supports. I got them from the Good Feet Company. I don't know if you're
mm-hmm.
familiar with them.
Sure.
And this was probably a couple months ago, and it's still prevalent. So I'm just wondering if there's other things I could be doing. I haven't gotten back to martial arts yet because it hurts enough where I don't really want to aggravate it anymore.
Sure.
But I have been doing like elliptical exercises and weight training and stuff like that, and I can get by doing those kind of things.
Okay, and is the plantar fasciitis in both feet, Dan?
It's in just the left foot.
Just the left foot, okay.
Yeah.
And in your martial arts, first of all, that's all done barefoot, right?
Right.
Okay, and in your martial arts, do you particularly stand more on your left and kick with your right, or is there a, you know, kind of some...
I probably kick more with my right foot.
So you probably stand more on your left.
Yeah, I probably pivot more on my left.
Okay. And how long have you had these symptoms, Dan?
About 2 months.
Okay. So far, it sounds like you're doing everything right. You've modified your activity. You've taken out the thing that you think really aggravates your symptoms. Unfortunately, your martial arts. You're icing, which is a good idea. It sounds like you're stretching. The one thing where I get really picky about stretching with plantar fasciitis is to make sure that when you're doing your heel cord stretching or your gastroc stretching, that you're really stretching your gastroc. So what I have patients do is I have them like roll up a little sock or take something small and put it under their arch. So their okay. foot isn't flat on the ground, but you're kind of bearing more of your weight on the outside of your foot.
Okay.
What we call kind of supinated. So the so you really okay. make your arch and then do your gastroc stretch. So we know you're truly have locked up your foot and are truly stretching your gastroc. Because what happens is a lot of people do their gastroc stretch and say, well, I'm not really feeling it. And it's probably because of the position of their foot. It doesn't put the gastroc at a good position to get that optimal stretch.
Okay.
So I get really picky about that. Make sure your toes are pointing straight ahead. Your toes aren't out to the side. Put a little something under your arch so your arch is supported, and then do your calf stretch, both with your knee straight and your knee bent.
Yeah, and there's some recent research that came out that show that plantar fascia specific stretching, in addition to the heel cord stretching, is very helpful. And that's okay. basically if you take your, if you cross your left ankle across your knee and take a hold of your toes and pull your toes up towards your calf and stretch that way.
I've been doing that too.
Okay, very good. A couple words about arch supports, and again, in response to John, Jill talked about seeing a physical therapist or a podiatrist for custom orthotics,
right.
and typically that's a good idea if you've determined that orthotics are going to be helpful for you. So sometimes we try the inexpensive off-the-shelf ones first and see if they're helping. Then if they are, you go on to the more expensive custom ones that last longer. The other thing you can try is a night splint. Those are very, very helpful. In fact, my sister Jill made me a pair before you could buy them so readily over the internet. She made me a pair out of cast material. It was very funny and very humorous, but it worked.
I casted both of her legs mm-hmm. and then left the room.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I still speak to her. So the night splints are very effective. And the last thing you should know about plantar fasciitis is it takes a long time to go away.
Right.
You just have to stick with it for months. But I'd get the night splints.
Okay. What about I'm also putting my toes on the edge of a stair and stretching that way. Is that a good calf stretch?
Yep.
Well, that's
okay.
That actually will stretch more of your plantar fascia, but yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So that's a good one, too.
Yep.
Okay. Do you guys have a website where these kind of exercises are demonstrated? Or
UW Sports Medicine Physical Therapy has a website,
okay.
and I'm pained that I can't tell you the exact, but if you probably if you go to uwhealth.org, you could probably find links to the Sports Medicine Center and get to there. And I can't tell you if they have exercises up on the website or not.
Worth a look.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask one more question? About the martial arts, when would you recommend that I start easing back into that?
Well, I would definitely say that you want your symptoms to be kind of at a baseline level where you can do some increased activity and not pay for it the next day. And what I would do is I would start very slowly with the martial arts. Even if you're doing 10 or 15 minutes of martial arts and you feel good, I would stop and see how you feel the next couple days before I increased my time. So I would try the night splints, see if that overall decreases your symptoms. If you feel like your symptoms are kind of on an even level, then I would start slowly implementing the martial arts and definitely take a couple days off in between.
Good luck, Dan. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Carolyn DePere is next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question that relates to an answer that Ms. Brady gave to someone who she said should do some water exercises. I'm not much of an exerciser, but some years ago, I did try, and I joined a class, and I promptly tore something in one of my legs. Is there a way to get some sort of a written plan so that when you go to those of us who don't live in the larger cities don't have access to a lot of different types of water exercises, we just have to go and do some of our own, that you'd know what to do?
Well, there are a couple books out there that show water exercises. That's one way. And if you go to a class, you know, you might look at what the instructor credentials are. There are various credentials that you can get to be a water exercise instructor. Mm-hmm. The Arthritis Foundation, as well as private organizations, do certify people to be water exercise instructors. So checking their credentials can be helpful. If you have a specific problem, You can see a physical therapist who can design a water exercise program for you, keeping in mind whatever your specific condition might be.
Well, I have a suspicion that I'm just generally not in very good condition because I don't exercise,
yeah.
and I'm somewhat overweight.
Yeah. You know, it's part of the Physical Therapist Practice Act charges physical therapists to be proactive in health promotion and the prevention and health promotion and wellness. So that is an aspect of our practice. So it is reasonable, particularly if you have some health conditions, you know, you're overweight or perhaps you have a heart condition or blood pressure problems or whatever, to go to a physical therapist for that kind of program design.
Mm-hmm. Right. We'd much rather see you now than when you have an injury because you haven't been exercising. So we could put you on a program that's safe and effective, gradually increase your activity. And I think that'd be a great thing for you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Carol.
Thanks very much for calling. And I went online and I found three or four books on one's called Pounds Off with Water Exercise. I have no idea if it's a good book or not, but there are books out there.
They're out there.
That'll help. Bill in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I've heard several callers comment about slipping on the ice, and the reason I'm calling is because I'm blind. I walk with a guide dog, and every time I say, good boy, Holland, he speeds up. Of course, that's a subject, I suppose, for
right.
But the reason I'm calling, I don't want to put you fine ladies out of business, but I use something called Yak Tracks on my feet.
Yeah.
And they keep me from slipping. They're very effective, and they fold up nicely in your pocket and can be put in your pocket. I just thought the listening audience, some folks might benefit from knowing about that particular thing. You can get them at any sporting goods store.
Yep. Yeah,
I just thought I'd call in off of that. Thank you.
That's wonderful. Bill talked about those in the last show. He couldn't think of the name of them. So thank you for this, Bill, to this Bill, for remembering what the name of those are. Yeah, those are great. And we don't mind things like that, help. There's enough other stuff going on. We don't need people falling on the ice to keep us in business, trust me.
Jim Packard has a pair of those, and
he
likes them.
Yeah.
Helps a lot getting out in these icy conditions. Mm-hmm. Bill, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question relating to an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Rich in Eau Claire is up next, so let's go to Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hi. When I stretch my heel by putting my toes up towards my shin, I get a burning sensation, the back of my heel. It's not really in the center of the back, but it's off to either side. And I was wondering, I've had it for 3 or 4 months, and I've tried ibuprofen and some stretching on it, but it just doesn't seem to go away. Any ideas on what that could be?
When else does it bother you? You said when you do your stretch it bothers you, but do you notice it throughout the day?
Yeah, if I'm, for example, walking upstairs, I set it off now and then, but not always.
Okay.
Does
footwear matter? Does it matter if you're in a certain pair of shoes or barefoot?
It doesn't seem to, although I recently, in an attempt to clear it up, went and bought some new shoes, walking shoes and running shoes. I, you know, currently don't do a lot of either walking or running, but, you know, I'm thinking that a change in shoes might help. Another thing that sets it off is if get out of bed in the morning and I bend down towards the floor for whatever, that'll set it off too. So I get that kind of a stretch in the back.
Okay, and is it both legs?
No, mostly my left.
Okay, and you can't think of anything that happened 3 or 4 months ago to set you off?
Well, no, but I kind of wonder if it was the shoes I was wearing. They they didn't have a lot of cushion in them.
Mm-hmm. Could very well be. Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Is that the bursa area?
You do
off to the side there, or?
Yes, yes.
You do have a big bursa back there.
Yeah, there's a couple of big bursas behind your heel. You know, burning, when you describe burning, it's a little hard to nail down. Typically, you associate burning with nerve problems or irritation to nerves. But if you stretch a soft tissue hard enough, it's going to feel like it's burning to you. So it's a little bit tough to nail down a primary problem when it's burning. You know, you think, well, is something coming from your back? Probably not if you're going up the stairs and it's bothering you up the stairs. So, you know, my best guess is that something is being stretched and irritated as you pull your toes up. The first thing is their plantar fascia. It could be a nerve that's passing through your plantar fascia, in which case some massage with the tissues underneath your arch, Dan called earlier and he had that bottle. He had a bottle filled with water and then he would roll it underneath his arch and massage it. You might try some of that kind of massage or deep tissue massage in your plantar fascia.
And there are a couple of peripheral nerves that run down there, and you have one on kind of either side of your Achilles per se, that with a small amount of trauma or inflammation to that area could almost kind of become entrapped. And so seeing a physical therapist to see if that's part of it and get some exercises to actually floss your nerves like you floss your teeth would be helpful if that's the source of your symptoms.
Yeah, it's a little hard to sort out with your symptoms. And when you said you wore shoes without any cushion, you know, again, is it the issue of cushion where on impact or is it cushion underneath your arch that's supporting your arch? Because those are really two very different problems from our perspective.
I think it was more cushion on impact.
Uh-huh.
It seemed to have good arch support in the shoe.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Then also underneath your heel is your fat pad, and there are nerves in your fat pad also. So if you didn't have good cushion, you may have irritated some of those nerves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can kind of refer pain anywhere. It could refer around to the back of your heel. And then when you stretch, you know, all the soft tissues in the bottom pull on it. So if you really want to get this sorted out, I'd probably go see a physical therapist and have them take a good look and examine you and see if they can do an exam to detail out the source of the symptoms.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, Faye in Milwaukee, I believe, is next. So let's go there. Hi, Faye.
Good morning.
Morning.
A year ago, I fell on the ice, and I dislocated and broke my ankle in several places.
Oh.
It was dreadful, but I had a remarkable recovery, and was back at the gym with my boot and crutches in 6 weeks, and I'm back to my normal exercise program. But what I've noticed is that they didn't quite put me back together.
They left some parts on the side?
Well, no, the angle of my ankle is different. And the way I noticed it is I do a bike spinning type of I go for like 30 minutes high and low. And when I get off the bike, my left pant leg is totally twisted around it's up to my knee. And so there's a pronation of the left ankle outward. And when I do, I'm on a weight machine, the seated leg press, my left knee is lower. Now, right now, I mean, I'm feeling great. In fact, I even went and had the hardware removed.
Wow, good.
So, but I'm wondering if there's somewhere down the road this could cause complications. And what would I look for if I did?
Oh, really good questions. Well, first of all, the expectation that your ankle's going to look anything like your other one.
No, I know.
After this, yeah. I mean, the fracture is one thing, but the dislocation is another. And you can imagine if it's been dislocated, there's been a great deal of trauma to the soft tissue. People focus on the fracture because you can see it and you put hardware in to fix it, but the soft tissue is another whole problem. So, what kind of symptoms would you look for? Aching in your ankle after you've been up on it, swelling, increased stiffness, probably the biggest risk factors of the development of arthritis down the road.
Well, you know what? Everything is really good right now, so I guess I'm blessed. I found out through this
horrible accident that I heal really quickly.
That's great. Right.
And I have an incredible tolerance for pain. So, but I'm just wondering, it's kind of odd to notice this, that you're not quite the same as you were before, but I'm thinking, well, right now it's not having any problems. One other quick question. I have bursitis in my right hip. I drive a lot for my job. Can that eventually go away? Bursitis and irritation, it's like a pain in my butt from driving?
It can, and I will tell you that we hear a lot of patients who do sit and drive a lot have this problem, and especially if you have bucket seats, and the seats have a tendency to be scooped, and they kind of position your hips, kind of roll your hips in a little bit, and they put a little added stress on your greater trochanteric bursa. And so we see this a lot with folks who do quite a bit of driving.
Yeah.
So do you suggest something to put on the seat? Or?
Well, I have suggested to patients that if they kind of raise the bottom part of their seat up a little bit, put a little pad under there, a very small pillow or a towel, so the seat is more straight across versus concave, that would help.
Yeah, I got an air cushion to put on there, and it's almost too big. So, that hasn't helped. And I've had physical therapy. I do a lot of stretching, and it's funny because some days I can drive 4 hours, it's nothing, and the next day I drive an hour, it's there. It's literally a pain in my right butt.
Yeah.
And I've had the shots, and they do nothing. But I'm just kind of hoping it'll just go away.
Yeah, it certainly can over time. It sounds like you're doing everything right. The one thing I would also suggest, it really sounds like it's from driving your car.
Yeah.
But the other thing I would suggest is when you sleep at night, if you sleep on your side, to put a pillow between your knees.
Oh, okay.
So that's one less time that your legs aren't kind of rolled in or pushed in.
Okay.
So a pillow between your knees that's just wide enough to kind of hold your legs perfectly straight or parallel with your pelvis.
Okay.
And I would definitely try that.
Okay, sounds great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And then, of course, I always have to have the last word
because you're the older sister.
Thank you for sharing that. The last thing about the ankle is making sure to keep your body weight down, which it sounds like she does, but wearing a good shock absorptive insole because the ankle is going to be at risk for fracture, for arthritis. So just to make sure she's getting good shock absorption there and good support for her arch.
All right. Thank you, Faye, for calling. And Jen in DeForest, I believe, is next. Jen, hello.
Hi. I just want to say thank you, Larry. You always seem to have timely shows for me.
Well, great.
But I have another ice problem, I think. I've either banged my elbow just, you know, around the house in the past month or so, or it's from taking a heavy pull and chopping the ice in our driveway.
Oh, yeah.
But I have injured my elbow somehow.
Yeah.
And it's not a constant throbbing. It just kind of comes and goes, but it does get to the point where it's even difficult for me to lift a glass of water. But the pain is definitely radiating down my arm and then a little bit up to my shoulder, and it's certainly coming right from my elbow. I do have an appointment with my doctor in 2 days.
Great.
But I'm hoping that maybe you might give me some advice in the meantime.
Well, I feel your pain literally because I went out and chopped ice a couple Sundays ago, and it's sudden quick elbow extension when you try and chop that ice, and that's your tricep muscle. And so I had terrible triceps pain and elbow pain for a couple days after I chopped my ice too. And so it's probably your triceps muscle attaches right at your elbow, and it's probably muscle soreness from doing that quick, brisk elbow extension, and that's probably why it partially goes up your arm, too. You could try doing some very gentle stretching by putting your arm straight up in the air. Yeah, by reaching back and scratching your back, basically. So you put your arm straight up in the air and then bend your elbow so your palm is on your back.
Right.
And see if you can do some easy, gentle stretching that way.
Okay.
You could certainly be icing it. That would help as well.
Okay. But it takes a while for this to go away.
It does.
Okay.
Yeah. The other possibility is that you could have developed a tennis elbow from
what I was wondering.
Yeah, gripping that and you know, in the medical profession, we like to say it's one thing or the other, but it's very likely you have both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes there are two things going on at once, where you have some of the tricep stuff and a little bit of the tennis elbow. The tricep stuff, as Jill said, should resolve in a couple days with some good stretching and things like that, but the tennis elbow will persist. So
okay, that's what I'm wondering. I have simply just because I've had this for at least a month.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so. you should definitely get a referral to PT when you see your doctor in
okay.
2 days.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye. Thanks
very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Diane in Minocqua is next. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions. I have chronic pain. I've had it for 7 years, and it's just from the back of the butt down to the feet, and I've been to PT, and it hasn't helped. I've been to acupuncture. I've been to the doctor. I've taken the pain medicine, and so I'm looking at what is my next step to get rid of this because it causes me to stop walking. I walk 2 miles every morning. It's just so hard. I can't sit. I stand all day. And it's always like a level 7 to 9 pain. It just does not go away. And I don't know what else I should do about it, if it's muscle or nerve related or both. Or I'm really
wondering.
Yeah, I'm wondering what I should do next.
Tell you what, we'll ponder that. And we'll get back to you with an answer here pretty shortly. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests, Lori Tyne-Brody and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, their sisters. Jill's a faculty associate in the UW Physical Therapy Program. Really glad to have them with us today as we talk about aches and pains and sprains and strains. And Diane from Minocqua has, speaking of pain, in chronic pain, I mean just pain all the time, and has not been able to try different things and has just not been able to find a solution. And what do you think, Lori?
Well, I'm going to start with a presumption that she's been seen by her physician and been worked up for a diagnosis or anything that's amenable to surgical intervention or other kinds of treatment. So I'm going to presume that she's been there and is now left with chronic pain that people don't really know what to do with. My suggestion would be to be seen at a comprehensive pain center. And because of the prevalence of chronic pain in our society today, pain clinics, comprehensive pain centers are springing up in many, many places. I'm guessing in Minocqua, probably her closest bet would be Marshfield as a place that has a comprehensive pain center. But I'd make some phone calls. Maybe her physician can help get her in one of these facilities. But in that facility, and we have several of them in Madison, the staff there are trained to address the multifaceted nature of chronic pain. It's not just a physical issue, and it doesn't have to do with just the individual, but it has to do with the individual, his or her family, their community, their social structure, their emotional and psychological structure. So it's a comprehensive facility that will help deal with the many, many facets of her chronic pain.
Okay. Sounds like she was on her, you know, she tried everything else,
right.
And this sounds like a great option for her.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times up to that point, the treatment is piecemeal. You know, to go to physical therapy, you go to occupational therapy, you see a chiropractor, you see, you know, this physician, and it's not a cohesive team effort.
Dennis in Wausau has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's afternoon, I guess, by now. Hey, I have two things. One, I'm wondering if anybody has ever heard of cumin, as they use it a lot in India.
Uh-huh.
Cumin.
Oh, I love cumin.
Yeah. What are you making us for lunch?
Exactly. You're really making me hungry now.
Oh, no. Well, really, I had a situation here where I'm pretty sure the doctor thought that I was cancerous. And I've been taking this stuff. I mean, it's very cheap. It's basically a spice, as you know.
Yeah.
Right.
And I had taken the stuff for about 6 months. I always just toss a little on my cereal in the morning because I couldn't find many recipes for it. And then I was told that in India, they supposedly have a very low cancer rate. And I was also heard that they possibly are using a lot of this spice. Do you think there might be any relationship?
Oh, well, I'd have to say that I'm not qualified to answer that question. You know, the epidemiologists are the people that sort that out. You know, the issue is that people in India may use a lot of cumin, but they also have a very different lifestyle. They eat different kinds of food. They have different daily habits. They have different social structures in their country. You know, there are so many variables that are different that it's hard to say that cumin is the answer. It may be a piece of it, but it really takes a study with thousands of people carried out over years to tease out, you know, what are the factors that contribute to it. That being said, if you're taking it and it's making you feel good, then take it. It's a great spice.
There's an Indian doctor in the area, and I'm going to go see him, see what he says, because he's actually from there.
Sure, go.
Other thing I was going to say, there's been a lot of talk about arch supports this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I didn't hear, and I didn't probably hear the whole program, but I found some arch supports that, believe it or not, if your feet aren't quite the same, you can take the arch support that doesn't fit quite right, you boil it for two minutes, and you bend it.
Yep.
You've seen those.
Yes, they're lovely.
Oh, yeah.
They're off the shelf, and they're moldable. The plastic has memory such that you can warm them up, and they become a little pliable.
Yep.
And then they hold that shape. So, yes, those work quite well. Absolutely.
They're wonderful.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Amanda in Madison emailed us a question. She says, I've been having knee pain in both knees for a couple of years. I'm 24.
Oh.
Pain generally occurs for a day or two after running. Mm-hmm. I've given up running for the past year in favor of using an elliptical, which doesn't seem to cause me any pain. However, after a lot of walking in a day, the pain comes back. It's located beneath my kneecap at the cavity towards the outside of my knee. I can feel it most intensely walking downstairs after running. Any exercises I can do that will strengthen my knees so that I can return to running? I'd appreciate any advice you can give. What do you think?
Let's see.
You want to start?
Sure, absolutely. Well, it's more than likely what we call patellofemoral stress syndrome or patellofemoral pain syndrome. And basically what that is your patella has to sit in between two bumps on your knee, on your femur bone. And I tell people that it has to go up and down like a canoe goes down the river. You don't want to be hitting the rocks in the river. You just want the canoe to go straight down the river. And that's what your kneecap should do down this groove. And sometimes when we have tightness in our muscles, what happens is the patella tracks a little bit medially or laterally, most often laterally. So many times it's due to tight muscles, particularly the IT band or iliotibial band. So doing some really good aggressive stretching of your iliotibial band would be very, very helpful. The other thing that can affect your patella alignment is your foot. So looking at your feet to make sure that the shoes that you have for running are actually the type you need for your foot type. And then lastly, strengthening exercises. You would need to do something that would strengthen your muscles in a pain-free range, wouldn't bother your patellofemoral joint, and have a little eccentric component to it. So a single leg step down where your involved foot is on a step, and your uninvolved foot is kind of swung out to the side, and you slowly lower yourself in a very controlled fashion and come back up would be really good strengthening for the quadriceps muscle. The biggest thing is making sure that you have good form when you do that. Many people have a tendency to kind of roll their leg in because they have hip weakness. And so this could also be coming, believe it or not, from some hip muscles. So the best thing for you to do is actually probably see a physical therapist and get a thorough assessment and get put on a proper strengthening and stretching program. And this is something that would definitely resolve with physical therapy or at least help with physical therapy. You're way too young to have stopped running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. If you stop running for that long, then that's not right. And this is a problem that's easily treatable with physical therapy. And Jill's right that it can be coming from a multitude of different factors. So for us to say, well, you can do the strengthening exercise, and the strengthening exercise she gave you was actually a very good one, you know, that then it's going to get better. So you go do it and you don't get better, then you're going to be mad at us. So, you know, that's one step. But if it's coming from your hip and your hip posture and hip weakness, you really need some hip exercises. If it's coming from your foot and poor foot alignment, then you need some arch supports and some strength there. But what you really need is some education about the lower extremity posture and mechanics in order that you can manage this problem by yourself.
Okay. And on to Jared in Dane, Wisconsin. Hi, Jared.
Hi. My question is I'm 29 years old, and in my early mid-20s, I was big into downhill freestyle skiing, a lot of big jumps coming down. I never had any significant, like, ACL injury, nothing that, like, put me out for days at a time. But now I started snowmobiling this last year, and a great year for it. But, man, I can't ride very long before my knees, right inside my kneecap, on the inside between my bone and my kneecap, on both knees get severely sore. And I'm sitting for a day or so with a knee brace on. And I guess I'd like to avoid surgery, but are there things I can do to...
Yep. Well, you know, it's a great follow-up to the last question because it's the same problem. And what tends to bother people, as Jill said, it's like the canoe. What's happening when you're sitting in a certain position is your patella is contacting one of those rocks or one of those bony prominences on the side right where you have some wear and tear. And that, coupled with the vibration of the snowmobile, is really stirring up your kneecap. So you might do better if your knee was at a different angle, but I don't know that a snowmobile would allow you to change, is flexible enough to allow you to change the angle that your knee rests at.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that it's going to make a big difference. Probably what you need, you know, in contrast to Amanda, who needed probably some strengthening, some hip work, you probably need some mobilization of your kneecap. But if you have some underlying wear and tear arthritis, which I'm guessing you probably do from your history, then sitting with your knees fixed at that angle for long periods of time, particularly in the presence of some vibration and the cold, is going to be a non-starter for you.
Okay.
Good luck.
So I think you should, that being said, you should probably see a PT, get an evaluation, see if they have any exercises for you. You can try some joint mobilization and see if that helps, doing some exercises and some stretching and stuff between now and next winter, and see if it's any better next year.
Good luck, Jared. And I'm frankly, I have to tell you, I hope we don't get as much snow next year as we've got this year.
Yeah, I hate to be a Scrooge about it, but enough is enough.
We've had several people wanting to know the name of that the item that you put on your shoe to protect yourself from slipping on the ice, and I've
the yak track.
Yak track.
Mm-hmm.
Yaktrak, probably.
Probably. Yep.
All right. On to Bruce in Blair. Bruce, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Oh, you betcha. Sounds like a tough show on knees. Yesterday, I was sledding with my children. We were sliding down a hill, and we were moving really fast, and I had large pack boots on, and I thought I'd slow us down, and I put my foot out, and I felt my inner knee, my left knee, just pop.
Oh, yeah.
And I laid there for quite a while.
I bet you did.
Before I could even move, but I just was wondering if you could kind of give me some idea. I'm self-employed, and I have just a terribly intense work schedule, and I'm just not able to go seek medical attention right now. And I was wondering how critical it is. If there's light at the end of the tunnel here in about 2 weeks, can I let it go that long? Or
well, what are your symptoms like now? Are you able to walk? Are you back?
I went and got a brace right away. I put a brace on it. My knee, my left knee is about a third larger than my right knee.
Okay.
And most of the swelling is all on the inside.
Okay.
But I can push on my knee until I get almost right up on the kneecap, then right under there I it feels real tender.
Okay.
And mobility, I can almost get my knee to a 90-degree angle.
Okay, good.
But it really tightens up on the top of my leg then.
Sure.
Right.
How about straight? Can you get it straight?
No. I thought I could, but almost. It's really close to straight.
And what happens when you try to push it farther straight?
It really pulls on that side of the knee.
On the inside?
Yep. But I'm pretty close.
Okay.
Good. That's very good. It's very important that you get your knee fully straight, because we need to fully straighten it for walking purposes, to have a normal gait. Are you icing?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, let's get you icing. So go on outside and take a bag with you and take some of that snow and throw it in a bag.
Okay.
And seriously, ice for a good 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
Frequently throughout the day. It sounds like you're a pretty busy guy, but
yeah.
the frequently throughout the day is great. So especially at the end of the day, if you've been up on your feet, ice it a bunch before you go to bed. I would suggest icing it and then putting your sleeve back on immediately. That'll help kind of compress it, so hopefully hold some of that swelling out.
Okay.
And what kind of work do you do?
Actually, we're self-employed poultry farmers, so we're in the middle of a big clean-out where we move a lot of equipment, and so I really need both of my legs.
Okay. Well, that's the bigger question is whether or not you're going to be able to use that leg for what you need to do.
Yeah, I can. It's been working so far.
It's been working.
I'm slow.
Okay.
But.
Well, the most likely primary differential diagnosis is that you tore your medial collateral ligament. It's a ligament on the inside of your knee.
Okay.
The next thing after that is you might have torn your meniscus on that side. And then if it's really bad, you might have torn your anterior cruciate.
Okay.
Or subluxed patella.
Or subluxed patella. That's another one out there. Yeah.
Lots of options.
There are lots of options. But the big thing is that you need to be able to, you don't want your knee to lock. If your knee is locked, then you need to see somebody right away. So as long as it's not locked and you're able to get her pretty much full straight, you can make an appointment to see your doctor the minute
those chickens are moved.
Those chickens are moved, exactly. Okay. But in the meantime, you've got to be really careful not to re-injure your knee.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big problem. The ice and the barns and the uneven surfaces and all that really puts you at risk.
Yep.
So I'd make sure you had a good brace on, you took your time, you were stable, get yourself some yak tracks so you're not slipping on the ice or whatever.
Can I ask you, we have a hot tub, and it's actually given me relief. I go out there, am I really working against myself by using that?
I'm sure it probably gives you some nice temporary relief, but I think your injury is so acute yet that we should avoid the heat and really go with ice until your swelling is a little bit under control. You said your leg was about a third the size of the other one, which tells us it's still pretty, kind of what I refer to as angry. So let's get that swelling down first.
The only alternative to that would be to drop the temperature of your jacuzzi down until to the low 90s,
mm-hmm.
and then getting in and moving it will help move some of the swelling and the fluid out.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want that heat, like Jill says, in this phase. That's too hot.
Yeah, it takes the fun out of the hot tub.
If you take something cold to drink, it might be,
Good
but anyway,
luck.
Get in and see somebody as soon as you can.
Thanks a lot, Bruce, for calling. Appreciate it. Lynette and Hubertus, it's your turn now. Hi, Lynette.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
About maybe 6 months ago, August, September sometime, I was out with the dog, and I had the rope wrapped around my hands like I shouldn't have. And he took off in one direction and really yanked. And I was in a lot of pain on that hand for a while. A couple of the fingers were really sore, but one in particular, I figured it was just sprained, strained, whatever, and that it would eventually heal itself, and it has not. I now believe that the tendon was ruptured. The finger is in a permanent flexed position. I cannot extend it, but I can flex it a little bit more than what it currently is, but it is currently in a total. The first digit is in a flexed position.
And which position, which joint is it flexed at? Is it the very, very end joint by your
the
thumbnail?
End.
Okay.
This is the ring finger, but yeah.
Okay.
It's the first joint. And I'm just wondering if it's too late to have something done about it.
Probably. It's. I would definitely go in and have it looked, because the worst they can say is no. But it's probably what we call a mallet finger, where you've ruptured the extensor tendon right at the end of that very last joint on your finger. If you can flex it more but you can't straighten it, you may have very well ruptured that extensor tendon. And unfortunately, the longer we go without getting those repaired, the farther those tendons kind of retract away from each other. They get fibrotic and fatty, and it's really hard to attach those tendons back to one another. And if this happened in September, October, it's probably too late. But it'd still be worth checking out just to make sure there's not anything we've missed.
I'd agree.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Good luck. Got another email. This one from Steve, and he is, I'm not sure where he's from, but anyway, he says, when I work out on the Stairmaster or Precor, the front part of my left foot becomes numb after 10 or 15 minutes. I have a large plantar's wart on the front center sole of that foot. Do you think numbness is related to the wart?
Probably not. You know, if they came on, you know, if the numbness came on shortly after the wart, then you could suggest that he was changing the way he moved because the plantar wart bothered him or something and it irritated a nerve. But the wart itself shouldn't cause the numbness problem. So, you know, we get that call fairly often. And actually, in all honesty, I have the same problem. If I'm on the cross trainer going forward too often, both of my feet fall asleep. And I stop and go backwards for a while, and then they wake up again.
sometimes it can be related to form or technique. If you spend a little bit too much time on the balls of your feet and your shoes are a little tight, you can have what's called a little Morton's neuroma, and that can cause that part of your foot to go to sleep. So we usually tell people to remind them not to be on their tippy toes so much.
Yeah, so, you know, the relationship between his plantar wart and the numbness, you know, if there was some sort of time element where one came on and then the other, you might think that they're correlated, but based upon pathology, no.
Okay. Lisa in Jefferson has a question for you, so let's go to Lisa. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little more on the tennis elbow that you mentioned earlier in the show. I've been experiencing elbow pain since probably about the middle of November and seems to have started about the same time I first started having to chip ice off of the driveway.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of throwing of a tennis ball for the dogs also to exercise them, and I've noticed it really gets really bad if I use one of those toys, plastic toys that extend your arm for throwing. And that really, I haven't even been doing that because it's just too painful.
Sure. Well, first of all, that little gizmo that makes you throw the ball farther so you don't have to touch the gooey ball just increases your lever arm. So it that would definitely probably increase your symptoms if you truly had tennis elbow. So with tennis elbow, what it is all of your extensor muscles come back and they attach on one little tiny spot on your elbow. It's kind of a bottleneck, if you will. So if you straighten your elbow and bend your wrists and kind of curl your fingers, you should probably feel a stretch in that area. Okay. So to do some easy, mild, gentle stretching in that area would be ideal. And it should be, I feel the stretch, but it's not excruciatingly painful. You should hold it about 30 seconds. Then the other thing you need to be cognizant of is gripping. Because anytime we make a fist or have to grip and lift items, we have to use those muscles to stabilize. So you don't want to have to grip anything where your grip is really, really small. You want your hand to be a little bit more open. That's a helpful thing. So when you said chopping the ice brought it on, that's very possible because you have to make a small grip with that.
Yes, and I've noticed I have been having a fair amount of pain just, you know, pretty much manipulating anything, moving dishes around in the kitchen, things like that. And I've been trying not to use my right hand as much as possible to avoid irritating it.
Right. Sometimes a wrist splint helps because it's actually the muscles that operate your wrist, not your elbow, even though the pain is at your elbow. So a wrist splint that you can get at a drugstore is really helpful and allows you to continue using the arm. The other thing that you can use is an elbow strap, a tennis elbow strap, and that goes up around your elbow just below where the muscles attach, and that helps take some of the strain off the insertion of that muscle at your elbow.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Lori and Jill, thank you very much.
It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, faculty associate in the UW Physical Therapy Program. Really great to have them with us. And they'll be back, and we will talk some more about those kinds of issues with you. Coming up tomorrow, Dr. Kyle Holen of UW Hospitals in Madison has some thoughts on the influence drug companies have over medicine. And then Dr. Bill Scheckler talks about flu and the flu season. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.